Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. My podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa, is in inception since 2020 May. And I have a privilege to invite great individuals who have shared great wisdom with us. And is available on iTunes, Spotify, and other major podcast platforms. I have completed almost 50 plus podcasts. And I'm just reaching to the next level. Today is another exceptional individual. His name is Michael Collins, or Mike Collins. He's a thought leader, sugar addiction. Now, I'll give you a small synopsis of his journey. His name is Michael Collins. He's the founder of sugaraddiction.com and Quit Sugar Summit, as well as the past chairman of the board and current board member of Addiction Institute, has been completely sugar-free for over 30 years and has worked closely with others to help them regain lives ravaged by this addictive product. Mike has been in recovery from substance use disorder for over 35 years and can speak on recovery topics separately from sugar as well. So what he has raised is raised two children sugar-free, which is an exceptional thing, because how we can stop children not eating sugar. So that's going to be another topic which we are going to dive into. So Mike, welcome to my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa.
Thank you so much. It's an honor. I really appreciate you having me.
Pleasure. Pleasure is all mine. So tell me who Mike Collins is and what is his purpose in this world.
Yeah, thanks. No, I'm, I think I grew up as a regular kid. I mean, we didn't have the information back then about sugar just wasn't out, right? My mom was a sugar junkie. So we had unfettered access to the sugar bowl. We could eat as much sugar as we wanted on our cereal and scrape up a half an inch of sugar on with the milk. It was crazy. And then all the cookies and candy, she had a stash. We knew where it was. And, you know, at the time I didn't realize sugar was changing my state, right? I didn't realize that I was getting a little buzz from it. I was getting a little, you know, when I felt a little down, I would have some candy or whatever. And there was always candy around or Kool-Aid or something we could have. And I didn't realize it. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody realized, and that's important for what we're going to talk about today, is that this is a powerful psychoactive drug and people don't realize that they're using it for such because they eat so much of it, right? They're 20 teaspoons average a day. And if you're overweight and you have a problem, we're looking at 30 and 40 teaspoons a day of sugar. And so fast forward, you know, I had all the candy in the world. There wasn't one candy I didn't like or have, except butterscotch. I don't know. I didn't like butterscotch. But anyway, I had everything else. And about 13, 14, 15, I ran into beer. And I knew beer changed my state. I was kind of shy and I could talk to girls and I was braver or something. You know, I was a liquid courage kind of thing. I could really, it was a different... different effect, right? And so fast forward, that party lasted till I was about 28 years old and I got sober. And I'm open book, I can talk about that if you want, but you know, sticking with the sugar theme, basically I went right back to sugar. I substituted sugar and I ate a lot of it in the first year of recovery. And a lot of my friends who were getting sober, the same thing, they were gaining a lot of weight fast. And I was a thin guy, athletic, and I gained a lot of weight pretty quickly. And so, you know, my friends were getting diabetes diagnosis and that kind of thing. And really just they couldn't control it. And I find this very common in that world. It's called addiction transfer. But so anyway, I mean, I got married to a woman and I was reading a book called Sugar Blues. Mm-hmm. And I really love that book. I love the history lesson about how we got into this mess and then how we could get out of it. And so I just kind of adopted it as another thing that I needed to do to get healthy. And so I raised two kids sugar-free from the womb, sugar, flour, and caffeine-free from the womb. She didn't eat it while she was pregnant, any of that stuff. And then till they were about 6 years old. And then, you know, through their childhood, maybe once, when I would go out to outside birthday parties, they would have sugar. That we never had it around the house at all. Anyway, I went on to have a regular life. I mean, I had a business career and, you know, just a regular life. You know, sugar was part of my thing. I didn't drink. I was stayed sober, whatever. And then about 10 years ago, I bought the domain name sugaraddiction.com. And I started giving the best information on the planet. I mean, I was searching everything because my kids always said, "Dad, you should write a book about sugar." So I did that too. And that's on Amazon. And I just started giving out the information. But I mean, some people would get the information and run with it and get off the sugar and have a benefit. But for the most part, there wasn't a lot of success. And I was busy still. So about 3 years ago, I was kind of semi-retired. And I decided I was going to start really coaching people. And I started forming online groups, and then it just took off. People really needed that extra support. And so, you know, that's where we bring our, you know, we come to today. We have the Quit Sugar Summit. It's really a little, it's been pretty successful over the last few years, because I think it's just a tipping point. I think the science in the last 5 years has just exploded. And that, you know, the brain reward systems, how it's been manipulated with sugar, and everybody knew about the weight and everything and the diabetes and all that kind of stuff, but they didn't really know that it was affecting their brain so much. So anyway, that's the short podcast version, Sam. You can ask me any questions. It usually brings up more questions than it answers. So
I think the thing which you have mentioned is quite an interesting area of our human physiology. Because we are never been given a proper understanding. Because I understand the spiking of your energy level goes up when you have sugar in your body and you start to see, yeah, I got a buzz and everything. That's why a lot of people have a couple of different sort of food in the morning, first thing in the morning, instead of having a proper cereal or any proper protein, they have Red Bull.
Sure, exactly.
And that's what I've seen so many people, and they'll just say, oh, that's my beginning. And nowadays there are a lot of energy drink came up with the caffeine is very high as well, so you are mixing two things together, and they are completely devastating your internal system. You're fast forwarding a lot of things for your body to act, whether your liver is working faster, your heart is beating faster, your other organs are beating faster, and then you are depriving your body. Reaching to that particular age, you are shortening your age as well. And there is this, what we call it, you know, there are three, and you will agree with it, there are three white powders which supposed not to be eaten is sugar, salt, and white flour. And right. These are the three things which affects our body more than anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So on your journey, when you now understood this sugar is like again, it's like a drug. Absolutely, it's a drug.
Yeah.
Because you give it to a toddler will be running around like a headless chicken until he will completely release his energy, then he will sit down. That's why a lot of parents are not realizing that sugar is extremely addictive once you give it to your children. And then, you know, and parents does not come, the child does not come with the manual. So parents are learning for their own experiences as well, not realizing that this is a completely havoc, which is going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen until you give it to your child. And then you realize, oh no, next time I'm not going to be giving it to the child. So do you think that this should be part of a curriculum in the school, or is part of the parental manual or something like that? How we can bring this in?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm a big advocate of, I mean, we had to fight everyone. We fought the schools because they, you know, they are rewarding children with you know, a good performance or whatever. They give them cookies and candy and everything. And all the parents of the friends and the grandparents, their own grandparents, you know, they thought we were depriving them of something. But the proof is there now. We like I said, we do the Quit Sugar Summit every year. And this year we have a really famous guy on. His name is Dr. Michael Gorin, and he wrote a book called Sugarproof Your Kids. And he's been studying childhood obesity for 30 years. And now the science and Nicole Avena, I mean, it's clear that you really shouldn't. And for the first time ever, the American Pediatric Dental Association, the American Pediatric Association of Pediatric Physicians, and the American Heart Association all agree that you should not have sugar. Kids between 0 and 5 should not have any sugar sweetened beverages, zero. And that's the first time any medical group ever agreed with any, you know, with each other. And so it's just, the science is really exploding around this, especially prenatal in the womb, right? They've discovered in breast milk. So it's definitely passing through the body, through the children, through the placental barrier into the brain. Now you have to remember, like, the brain in the first 1,000 days that's like pregnancy or, you know, conception through the first 2 years is so important. It's growing, exploding, growing exponentially in size. And when you're looking at the effect on the nucleus accumbens, the brain reward chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA, you know, even the adrenal glands and the big one, oxytocin, the bonding chemical, bonding with the mother, all of these things are affected by sugar. All of them are affected by, the larger the ingestion, the more the effect. And what it's called, Sam, is down-regulating the receptors. Your dopamine receptors are thinned out. There is less of them. And I really believe my mom gained 60 pounds on a 105-pound frame, that I started life with a little bit less dopamine receptors than the average person. And you have to fight your way back to that. You know, you have to heal up through abstinence and not using the product so that you can. And it's still speculated as to whether they actually do come back. But I think that they, you definitely feel better off the stuff and you little exercise and good hydration. But the bottom line is, this is where the science is leading us today. It's more about why you can't stop, right? Unless everybody like tries to quit or whatever, but it's the dopamine and the serotonin hit that you literally have grooved since your mom did it to you. So you're hurting, you're scared, you're worried, you're crying or something. Instead of getting down on your level, giving you a hug and saying, honey, what's wrong, dear? She basically gives you a cookie if she's busy and sends you off to the TV. It stops the crying and you learn, you literally associate that when I'm not feeling well, when I need some energy, when I'm sad, when I'm worried, when I'm scared, then I'll have some sugar and I'll feel a little bit better, right? And it actually works. Sam, when was the last time you saw a movie where a woman broke up with her boyfriend or a boyfriend broke up with her and they didn't have an ice cream party, right? So this is like cultural now where you get this relief from this product and people just don't give it the respect that it needs. And especially, you know, to your question around children and their development. So anyway, like I said, it's a ingrained habit. And I like to analogize or make it closer to nicotine. You know, I always, you know, people worry that I'm, because I'm a recovering guy and stuff, that people think that I'm trying to, like, it's alcohol or heroin or whatever, but it's a nasty habit that's very difficult to get off if you don't realize what's coming, which is the depression and the withdrawals. So yeah, it's a big topic, and my work now is moving toward the demographic of kids. I mean, we work with adults now, obviously, but in order to change this, we've got to move towards the kids.
Very true. And that is one thing which I wanted to add over here. It's that every culture, within the culture, there are a lot of other strands of this, the way it has been dealt with. So within the Asian culture, we are bound to have diabetes, diabetic or a heart condition, because the diet which we have is full of oil. And fat and everything. So our cholesterol level is very higher than we've seen people in the age of 35 or 40 suffering from heart problems, suffering from, my brother is 45 and he's suffering from diabetic. He's a diabetic. Mm. So, yeah. And then I was, I'm touch wood. My father was diabetic, but sometimes people say, is in your genes or is in your DNA? And I'm not completely agreeing with it, because it's about you, how you look after your life and how you look after your genetics and everything. Yeah. We are all are humans. We are all going to make mistakes. So we are learning from a lot of things. Now you are very proactive and supporting this action of helping millions of people to avoid this. But again, when you are, as you said, when we go into a shock or we're going into a party mode or something like that, what we are consuming, we're consuming sugar to make us high, to make us go to the next level. And we can't use as this as a drug, because people will look at us and say, oh, really?
Yeah, no.
Acknowledge it, correct?
No, it's defined as a drug. I mean, it's reduced to a white powder. It affects the brain. You know, there is withdrawals. You know, it has all of the hallmarks of any addiction. So yeah, it's definitely a drug.
Yeah, it is. And with this comes with so many things. So within your book, what you are relaying the message, could you please share some information about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Folks always ask, do I have to do this for the rest of my life, right? They worry that they're never going to have a little birthday cake or whatever. They won't be able to share celebrations with weddings or whatever. And the answer is, it depends. You know, it depends whether or not, you know, how deep your habit is, number one. But biochemically, there's a certain amount of people, about a third of people, who biochemically, they cannot ingest this product without wanting and needing and craving more. It just has been either through, you know, obviously it's not perfectly clear whether it's the biochemical, whether they were born this way or that they have just, you know, grooved, like I said, these deep neural pathways in their brain that when they ingest it, they want more. And the effects that has mentally and physically is just too much. So they have to have 100% abstinence. So then there's another group of people, which I call push sugar addicts, meaning they have harmful use. Okay. So about a third, another third. And this tracks very closely with the obesity numbers, right? A third obese, two thirds overweight, and, you know, a third normal weight size. But you don't necessarily, in the third group, you could be a real serious sugar addict and be thin. So it doesn't really matter. But anyway, to finish it up, basically, the third of people who have the harmful use, when they stop or cut back, if they give themselves 30 or 60 or 90 days of abstinence and really get their body reset, then they possibly can enjoy a sugar treat once a month or a couple times a month. And they can stop that daily use of the 20 teaspoons and they have to watch their groceries, because anything from a box or a bag or a can or in this food system today, almost 80% or more has sugar in it. So you got to be careful. And then there's a third of people who are normal, you know, like a person that can drink one glass of wine and not worry about it and not become an alcoholic. And those folks are, you know, like we hate them all because they can have half a cookie and just leave it, right? But you can, again, I want to reiterate, you can be thin as heck and still have a very serious sugar addiction. I've had ultra marathoners, Olympic athletes. I've had everyone who, you know, body-wise, they look and appear normal. But mentally, they're just like always focused on the next sugar hit, you know. And so across the spectrum, anyone can be a sugar addict. And the way out, I mean, the simple answer, and I've studied this and I have thousands of testimonials on the website of people who have succeeded, and I've studied them, interviewed them. And basically the way out is community. It's because we're still outliers. Okay. If you quit sugar, if you quit drinking, they're like, congratulations. If you quit smoking, yay, all right, good job. If you quit sugar, they're like, are you crazy? You know, you need sugar, you need glucose, you need this, that, and the other thing, right? Well, you don't. First of all, we have, like I said, thousands of people who are on a whole food diet and do not eat any sugar or any flour or any caffeine. And they have a beautiful, happy life. They have fallen to a right-sized body. They are You know, the most important thing is they feel free because they don't have to have that coffee in the morning. They don't have to have that sugar in the morning. They don't have to have it at 3 o'clock for the extra boost. They don't boost. They don't think about it. It's not renting free space in their brain. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's weird that the answer to this is to get with a bunch of people who have done it before you, because likely you're not going to have anyone in your family. You may be the mom and have kids that are not going to be on board. You're going to have a spouse that's not on board. So you can't, because the addiction is like the cigarettes or like any addiction, it's strong. You're not going to be able to get past that time period where it settles out into a lifestyle. You know, you need a group of people to hang with. And even if that's online, it definitely works. So it's a strange discovery. It's not one that I had planned on. I always thought if I gave them the great science about how it's affecting their diabetes and their weight and everything and their brain, and they would just say, okay, and quit. But they really do need, you know, people really need the help. They need the support. So, you know, that's the biggest discovery from the book. And, you know, again, I could go into the perfect diet. I mean, but you can read that on Google. You don't need me. You don't need anything. But the reason is named The Last Resort Sugar Detoxes. Our average person has gone on 6.8 different diets. And they all say, I've tried everything under the sun. We just interviewed Judy Collins, the famous folk singer here in the United States. And Judy said she had done every diet under the sun, right? And our coaches, two of our main coaches, used to work for the largest weight loss company in the world. And you can probably figure out who that is. But they couldn't get success. They still yo-yoed when they quit the job, when they were stopped leading those meetings, they would gain weight again, right? And so it's like, you got to have the team. You got to have the support behind you. That's the main.
I think that's quite important. It's like anything, accountability has to have. And right. Then again, you need to understand that it's not a one-man show. You have to have a support. And mm-hmm. You have to have a support of the right people. You don't right. have a support of people who are sugar addictive. You need to have a support who are not sugar addictive, because otherwise...
They think you can do moderation for the beginning, at least. They think that you can, well, just have a little. Okay, you've been 30 days, you lost 10 pounds, you lost 20 pounds. You can have a little birthday cake on your daughter's birthday or your birthday, right? Mm-hmm. But we come to find out they can't. You know, they that one little slice or whatever sip turns into a month back on sugar and they gain all their weight back. So until you get control psychologically, emotionally, physically, you know, and a lot of the sugar educators that we talk to are after a year or so or no sugar, they can have a little treat. They're not programmed the same way anymore. It's weird. It's like they're deprogramming their sugar draw. And literally, they are rewiring their brain. They're changing the deep groove neural pathways in their brain. And so they can have a little treat once in a while. So that helps people. It makes them feel a little better if they, you know, if they can get some abstinence and control under their belt, and then possibly they can, you know, eventually have a little treat once in a while.
Yeah, true. But again, then when there are completely people who go back, I think there might be deep-rooted things which needs to be cleared. So as you remember yourself that you were sugar addiction was high because your mom was on high sugar addiction as well, and a lot of things have happened. But again, you have to have surrounding yourself. I used to take three spoons of sugar in my tea when I came to four.
Right.
Four.
Wow.
Because that was part of it. And then it was not that, oh yeah, it's going to affect me. And even though I did not overweight myself, but I had a very big belly in terms of, because I was having beers, then I was having sugary drinks, then I was having Indian sweets and everything, and I was just munching around and everything. And suddenly one day I stopped taking sugar. Yeah, I stopped taking sugar in my tea. Almost.
Congrats.
Yeah, 15 years now. I don't take any sugar, only into a completely different tea. But again, as you said, the moderation, or occasionally you take sugar on those sort of things, even though I don't like it, but sometimes you can't have those things without a little bit of sweetness in them.
Mm-hmm.
So again, even though a lot of things is deep-rooted, can be taken out, extracted from your system, and you have to come back. And again, as you said, the willingness has to be there. You can't work on somebody for 15, 20 years, or 15, 20 days, or 30 days, or 60 days, and then after 60 days, they were perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they go into a completely different set of people and sees mm-hmm. that, and then say, oh, yeah, I love it. Let's start munching around. So you can imagine they go back.
They do go back, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's quite interesting how everything works and how dynamics works. And it's not going to be easy. Nothing is going to be easy in life. You mm-hmm. have to work towards it and have some accountability. Without accountability, there is no success in anything. Correct?
Sure. No, you're right. People actually say that, Sam. They say, you know, what was the best part of the program is that somebody held me accountable, that I didn't want to let the other rest of the group, either their coach or the rest of the group, down. And that's important, because one of my coaches, her mother owns a bakery, literally. And that was her most important criteria. A lot of them are like that. The most important criteria is that they, you know, someone cared. I mean, basically someone, they weren't like a drill sergeant. They weren't like an army drill sergeant. They were like a caring, loving person who had been traveled the same road and had some success. And then they help them out, help the next person. So that's how we do it.
Yeah. I think it's quite important. And one of the message on the Facebook was, well, I'm looking for a coach, or what would be the best way going forward? So a lot of people were putting, oh yeah, I'm a coach too, I can help you with this and that. And sometimes I said, you know, the best thing is, yeah, you can hire a coach, but have an accountability partner.
Right.
You can exactly. each other accountable for each other's success or goals or settings like that. If you are not in a way of looking at hiring a coach, have accountability. And somebody put a note and say, yes, Sam, you're right, I had an accountability partner and I succeeded in my drill which I was on at the moment, and works fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in terms of your journey,
mm-hmm.
and now you are running a summit, you are doing a lot of things, what do you think that, whether we are not going to control it, if you are going to be using substitute, let's say for example brown sugar, mm. or we are using any other products which are plant-based,
right.
do you think, are they also going to have the same effect on our body, or they are going to have a different effect?
Yeah, that's a touchy one. A lot of people want to, what we call wiggle room, you know, they want to have a little sweetness of some kind. And what we find is that, you know, with the monk fruits and the stevias and the artificial stuff and any other kind of sugars, whatever, brown sugar, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Sugar is sugar, right? The body reacts the same way. The same dopamine stuff is released. The same insulin spikes happen. So you have to literally retrain your taste buds. And that does happen pretty quickly. You don't, you know, pretty soon macadamia nuts will taste sweet. Peppers will taste sweet. It's like you don't realize what this stuff has done to your taste buds. And it's like Pavlov's dogs, you know, you're conditioned to sweetness, right? You're really conditioned to not, to having this product. And once you get away from it a little bit, you don't crave it as much. You don't crave sweetness. They literally have food scientists on the other side of the, you know, the fence, trying to figure out what the best thing to light. Literally, they slide you into an MRI and they try and light up the same brain reward chemicals that drugs and alcohol do, right? And so they do it with sugar, and the oils and the fats and the, you know, whatever, they kind of combine it into this chemical experiment, put it in a bag or a box or a can, and then, you know, feed it to you and your kids. And it's kind of criminal almost in a lot of ways. But the bottom line is, you've got to, get conditioned to whole food. You got to shop on the outside of the grocery store. You gotta cook a little bit. You've got to prepare some of your own food. You can't trust fast food. Definitely you can't trust most restaurants. Sauces have to have the sugar because that keeps people coming back. They don't realize that this plate of pasta or this sauce, this beautiful salad dressing that, you know, got this beautiful healthy salad, but this salad dressing is all sugared up because people go to the restaurant and then they get this experience. Like, I like this place. They don't know why. It's very unconscious, but they've just got this big shot of sugar inside of savory food, right? Not like they're not eating big desserts. They're eating savory food and they're still getting this ingestion of sugar. So they think to themselves, wow, this is a great place. I like the, you know, and it's because they're getting more than their daily hit. So they're a little bit even elevated from their withdrawals and from their daily life. And, you know, the food obviously tastes good. You put sugar in it, tastes good, really. So yeah, it's an eternal vigilance kind of thing. You really just have to pay attention. What I say, Tim, is you have to separate. Here's the thing. So we share the delivery system of sugar with our regular food. Like you use a needle to inject heroin, you snort cocaine up your nose, you smoke cigarettes, and you drink alcohol, but you can put the alcohol away because you don't have to drink alcohol, you can drink water. But with food, you know, until you understand that you've got to separate the sugar out of it, it's hard because people don't want to constantly think about the first part of it, which is, does this box, bag, can have sugar in it? Do I have to read the label? Blah, blah, blah. But until you separate the delivery system, then you're going to keep making, quote unquote, what we call accidental ingestations, or, you know, not on purpose. But because you're not eating a sweet, right? You're not eating like a candy or cookie or cake or anything. You're actually just eating a savory food, but it has sugar in it and it keeps the cravings alive. So that's a hard lesson to learn, because just because this food system is so covered up with sugar in it. So yeah, there's tricks, there's tips to how to do all this. It's not immediately intuitive because society has evolved. And I always like to look at the history of how we got here so that we can show how we get out of here, okay? And England grew the largest, El Chapo and, all the big drug dealers don't have anything on. They would go to Africa and pick up the slaves. Then they would go to the Caribbean, pick up the sugar, the tea, the rum, and the United States, and then they come back, right? And they literally took over the entire world on the money that they had on sugar. And the people who lived in that time period, the doctors who had lived 70 years, and they got to see people go from 5 pounds average a year of sugar to over 100 in just like a short 100-year period, right? And so it's like they realize, they would say they're zombies on the tea, they're zombies on the coffee, they're gaining weight. We've never had this happen in history. And this was all written about in these history books in the 16th, 17th, and 1800s. But now it's been another 200 years and nobody realizes that history is there. We think that this is ailing, aging. We think that diabetes and weight gain and all these things are natural progressions of aging, when they are absolutely not. They are the result of the ingestion of these substances that have evolved into society, okay? And when you cleave apart the food that has sugar in it, when you cleave apart the history and you realize that for 10 million years, we evolved to have this body that doesn't really accept this powdered substance well, then you can move forward and get healthy, you know? That takes a little bit of, you know, like I said, it takes about a podcast worth of explanation. Just all the things you and I have been talking about. It's about an hour long. I don't have any like meat is murder for the vegetarians. Don't let friends drive drunk for the mothers against drunk driving. I have been experimenting with one, Sam. Maybe I'll use it for you for the first time. Sugar shrinks your brain. Okay. Proven fact. Harvard, Yale. Just Google it, man. Sugar shrinks your brain, right? And this is, they've taken scans of the brain and people on a high sugar diet, and then they've quit, and literally their brain, the holes in their brain heal up. And now they're calling Alzheimer's diabetes 3. It is like, I don't know. I need to get off my soapbox, but you understand what I'm saying. It's a tough thing that people are not thinking all the way through. They're just accepting it that because we ended up here after 200 years of evolution in our food system, that this is what it's always been and always will be. But they just need to separate it.
No, I'm completely aligned with you. But one thing is that we are being bombarded with so many subliminal languages on our TVs and our social media, and we are being targeted. Literally, we are being targeted. We are sitting with your spouse watching a movie, and then suddenly an ad will pop up indulging you to have some ice cream or something like that. Right. Even though you don't want to eat ice cream, but because it came on the TV, you started thinking, yeah, I crave for an ice cream. So you get up and go to the freezer and find the ice cream tub, and you brought it in, then end up eating the whole tub. And then you're feeling completely shattered. Then you started feeling guilty about it, and then you're thinking about, I'm feeling sick now, I don't want to go to sleep now, and by the time you go to sleep it's almost 2 o'clock in the morning, and then completely lethargic about it, and then you wake up in the morning, you are completely shattered because you didn't have a good sleep. Right. So the remnants affect a lot of them, but we still do the same thing again because we know we've been through that, the same headache and everything, because of this subliminal language is coming up on your screen and you can't read them because they are just going straight into your brain cells, triggering those things for you.
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, triggering those things for you. If you remember those signs coming up when the people were in America, they were going for the Vietnam War. We need you, we need you, we need you. Mm-hmm. Those things, subliminal languages were popping in.
Yep. And
parents were looking at it as, yeah, I need to send my child for a war. Even though they were not ready, but they were being forced with them with the messages on the screen. So there are a lot of things, and it has to go through with a small process. You can't quickly say, oh yeah, thank you very much, I'm going to quit the sugar. And then you will go into a cold turkey. Everything has to start with moderation. Everything starts with slow pace. You can't quickly jump. But there is one thing I would add over here is, you know, we can there is no such thing as thing that we can control everything, but we'll manage it. The management is to start to learn how you manage your intake. And one thing which I share with my audience as well is mindfulness. You know, mindful. Be mindful what you put into your mouth. Be mindful what you are thinking. What are the effect is going to happen to you, not only to you or your body, but people around you. You know, if you are going to go sick, what are the devastation is going to happen to your family?
Mindfulness is important. Yeah.
So I'm talking about mindfulness with children, mindfulness with yourself or adults or anybody. You should start a practice. It's only 10 minute practice a day. And you will be afraid to hear that these people does not have time. 10 minutes, too much time for them to sit quietly. Because it's difficult for people to sit quietly or not to be fidgety about their body. Because somebody says to you, you have to sit 10 minutes here on the chair without doing anything. You will say, really? That's not me. I need to move. I have to move around.
Yeah. Right.
Sure. Everybody has different journey. And people have to go through this journey of understanding that this episode of understanding your own life is important. People will say, well, I rather support somebody else. Yeah, I'm obese. Don't worry about me, but I will help you to reduce weight. I said, excuse me, but you can't reduce weight yourself. How can you help me reduce? Oh yeah, I have done this certification, that certification. I'm very qualified. If you've done this all qualifications, show us the proof, mate. Talk the talk and walk the walk. But people are not taking this thing seriously. And that's where I said to a lot of people, you know, you go on the journey of mindfulness, start to know yourself, who you are, why you're here. What are your senses? You have five senses. Are you aware of those five senses clearly?
Mm.
Yeah.
When yeah.
You sit in the stillness and hear those things come to you, and then you realize, you know, this is what I want to be. I want to cover my, I want to strengthen myself. I'm number one. I need to look after my body. I need to look after my soul. So I will be able to help others to succeed. This is what your mission is. This is what your journey is. To help people to suffer more going forward in life. As you said, Alzheimer's, this is all part of, because we are eating so much processed food. We don't know. Even in our vegetables, they are putting so much different type of water. Using, we don't know they are organic or not. We don't know whether what sort of a pesticide they are putting in. Right. So everything is being now created, not organically, but modified in different ways. Sure.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, no, you bring up a good point.
Excellent. Excellent. So tell my audience as where they can find your book and how they can connect with you.
Yeah, you should go to the website, sugaraddiction.com. We put it on free for a little bit. You'll see a big yellow copy of The Last Resort Sugar Detox. Just click on it, and we'll give you a free download of the book. It's really very helpful for a lot of people. It's helped thousands of people. And yeah, I mean, we've got the Quit Sugar Summit Challenge coming up. It starts on January the 11th. I'm not sure when this will air, but if you're seeing this, you can see all of the greats, Gary Taubes, Robert Lustig, all the great sugar educators there. I interview them all, and it's been real helpful for me. And so many people say they get their start there because that's where all the science is, right? There's all these great educators tell people what's up with it. But, and we have a 30-day challenge. We got a great thing going on this year. The world's largest sugar detox, Sam. It's really exciting stuff. January 2021, we're going to have we're going to go for a Guinness Book World Record in January, or maybe in September, but we're going to try. And it's just a lot of people, like we said, the community gets together and everybody just decides that no sugar for January, right? And just that 30 days, no big deal. And you know, everybody starts their New Year's resolutions anyway. So they try and go, and, you know, we try and all get together as a group, as a team, we all do it together. So it's exciting stuff. You can find information at sugaraddiction.com. Yeah.
Amazing. I'll put all the information on the release of the podcast, and people will be able to connect with you. Thank you, Mike, for being my guest on Chai with Sam Dosa. I really, really enjoyed it with our conversation. And people who are been listening, thank you very much for joining us. And if you have any more question about this addiction, please get in touch with Mike. And I will got all the information in the description. So please get in touch and have a fantastic rest of the evening, wherever you are. Thank you, Mike, for joining
us. Thanks, Sam. Bye for now. I appreciate it. Yeah. Bye-bye.